Luke Johnson, the writer who's worked with Wizards of the Coast, White Wolf, Goodman Games, and you're listening to The Tome. Woo!
My name is Harley Stroh, and I'm the line editor for the Goodman Games Dungeon Crawl Classics, and you are about to enter the dungeon of the Vorpal Network. Snicketer snack. Roll for initiative.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 80. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're going to be hitting the streets of Punjar with Harley Stroh of Goodman Games. By the time you're hearing this, it's probably too late to get in on the summer contest. If August has not yet ended by the time I get this out, you still have a little bit of time, but not much. So get over there and enter. The Vorpal Network forums are going full bore. I have some insights into the D&D 4th edition core book ink smearing controversy and some words from a Wizards of the Coast representative that I've posted over there. And that's just a sample of what you're missing out on over at the forums. We're building a community, and it's going great so far, but I just don't feel right about it without you being there. So why don't you ease my troubled mind and swing on by? Also, I know I've been going every other episode with Origins interviews and seminars, but I think I'm going to ramp this up a bit. At the request of Jeffrey D. Wynn, regular contributor of the show, who got some great stuff for us from Gen Con. So I think I'm going to now have Origins content, which I've got a few more left, and Gen Con content going about every other one, just to try to get things out as quickly as possible. I know I'm going to have to push myself to try to get a lot of episodes out to get this stuff to you, considering that I've just started the new job, but I'm going to do my best. I'm sure you understand. So, look for a lot of that in the near future before we return to our regular schedule and get back into the advice series that we started a while back. I have some interesting guest hosts in mind. For some of those, I've actually already started talking to them, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be on board for it. Lastly, don't forget to swing by the website. Follow me or the Vorpal Network on Twitter. I'm Squatch, spelled S-Q-U-A-C-H, and you can follow the Vorpal Network under the username Vorpal Network, one word. For updates on all sorts of geeky goodness and news, as well as updates on new episodes of Vorpal Network shows, like The Tome. Now, to Harley Stroh. I recorded this interview with him before Gen Con with the intent of getting it out before the convention, but alas, I got a job instead. I'm sure you understand. But the information is still relevant and extremely interesting about what 4th edition D&D products Goodman Games is releasing before the October date when third-party publishers are supposed to be allowed to publish products. I also now have review copies of everything discussed here, so hopefully I'll get a chance to get you some reviews of a few of these products and some other ones that weren't mentioned. But without more blather from me, here's more blather from me, along with Harley Stroh of Goodman Games. Okay, I am here today with Harley Stroh. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Harley is the full-time writer for Goodman Games and is very knowledgeable, I guess, of the upcoming products that Goodman Games has coming along that we're going to chat a little bit about today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Jeff. I appreciate it.
So let's get to know you a little bit first. How did you first get into playing D&D?
Oh. I think I did it the way most players my age did. I think the Redbox Mincer set was my first edition. It was a gift from a cousin. You know, I played it with a babysitter a couple times. I was probably 8 years old at the time, and then I've been playing role playing games ever since. And so, when Goodman Games came out with their DCC line, it was something that I saw in a gaming store, and I was like, I wish I had thought of this first. You know, you open it up, you see the blue maps, you see the Errol Otis covers. And for those of us that are old school gamers of one degree or another, it resonates with us. And so having the opportunity to write for the DCC line and now to be the line editor was, you know, it's something you've been dreaming about since you were 8 years old. And so, that's how I came into it.
So what's your history then with game design? Did you start off working at Goodman Games, or have you been around and published other places too?
Not terribly much. I was a fiction writer before I became a full-time game designer. I've published a few short stories, one with Wizards of the Coast, and it was that turnaround that actually inspired me to submit something to Goodman Games. I'm sure you'll recall back when it was just when TSR dominated the gaming industry. It was apparent to all of us fans, it was all done in-house. Either you submitted to Dragon or you got a job with TSR. There were no other ways about going about writing and publishing a module for Dungeons & Dragons. And so it wasn't until third edition and the OGL hit that it opened the door for a lot of us that otherwise, you know, would never have been opened. There was never the opportunity to write for TSR, to write for Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
But to answer your question, so I was a fiction writer first, and I kind of fell into game design. I would never call myself I'm not a very good game designer. You know, there are experts out there that can balance anything, and my first love of the game comes from telling stories with a group of people. And that's where most of my strengths lie. If any of my adventures is ever successful, it's because it helps a group of people tell a story.
So you're a storyteller who chooses game design as a method of telling story.
That's exactly right, Jeff. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned that you're a line editor for the Dungeon Crawl Classic line at Goodman Games. Is that the extent of your role for Goodman Games, or what exactly is it that you do as an employee there?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you noticed, I'm responsible for writing adventures and source books, but along with Joseph, I pick through submissions that are of the DCC line and submissions that might not be related to the DCC line to see, you know, what's exciting, what's new, what could Goodman Games possibly be looking for. And so oftentimes we'll get a submission from somebody who's perhaps never written has never done game design before. But if it's a strong idea, and if the author can provide a strong sample demonstrating that they're a competent writer, I'll pick that out of the slush pile, run it past Joseph. If it looks like something we might be interested in, then we issue the contract. So I'm also Goodman Games' first line of slush pile readers, if you will.
So how big is that pile? How much do you have that you go through?
I can guarantee that once I get back from Gen Con, it'll be pretty deep. On an average day, I maybe get between 5 and 10 proposals. But it's cyclical. You know, when people get excited at Gen Con, you know, we have a seminar that we do every year, how to write adventures that don't suck. And we'll be having that seminar again this year. And after that seminar, I always get a rush of DCC proposals. But what some folks might not be aware of is that we're not only just looking for DCCs. Goodman Games is really open to, especially with the advent of 4th edition, we're open to new campaign settings, source books for classes, source books for, you know, monsters. The slush pile contains DCC proposals, it contains really a variety of quality from some writers that have, you know, 20 years in the industry, some writers that are looking to make their first break, and all the proposals are treated with an equal eye.
Okay, so for all the fledgling game designers out there listening, what is it that will set them apart? What is something they should be doing to get past the barrier that is Harley Stroh and get published?
Well, they should know that they have a sympathetic eye whenever I'm reading something. However, and this is probably true of all slush pile editors, and it's a stereotype at this point, but a clean proposal without errors is your first and best attack. It's a shame, but anytime I pick up, you know, so we ask for one page proposals. So if I pick up a proposal of 250 words, and if there are errors in that, there's no way that in good conscience I can offer a contract for something that might be 60,000 words long, or say a 94,000 word book. The cleaner a manuscript I can present to my editor, the better the editor can do, you know, polish it and really make it shine. So whenever I get a proposal with, they might just be typos. They might be typos or usage errors. It's a big red light for me that no matter how brilliant the idea is, this isn't most likely an author we can work with. But so, you know, those 250 words, do your best to make sure they're clean. After that, I'm really looking for passion on the part of the author. If it's something that an author is excited about, chances are that they'll be able to communicate that excitement to the reader. And that's really what adventures are about, is if, you know, a good DM will run a good adventure if the DM is in love with that adventure. So an evocative, passionate writer who can also be clean and has fantastic game mechanics, boom. I mean, that's a sale right there. But you'd be surprised how few and far between those people might be.
Okay. So now you personally also are a writer for Goodman Games.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the upcoming releases for Goodman Games, you have two works coming out under the Dungeon Crawl Classics line and one item coming out under the Master Dungeons line.
Yes, sir.
What's the difference?
For listeners that are familiar with the Dungeon Crawl Classic line, they are designed to be intelligent, old school adventures that do exactly what they say on the box. There's a dragon on the lowest level of the dungeon. There's the NPCs don't make it out the encounter. They're old school dungeon crawls, which doesn't mean that they're simply hack and slash. It doesn't mean that they're stupid adventures. It just means that they're very focused adventures. And folks that are familiar with the Dungeon Crawl Classics line will understand that. Master Dungeons expands the scope a little bit further, so that whereas, you know, Dungeon Crawl Classic it's contained to the crawl. There shouldn't be a lot of locations involved. Master Dungeons, you know, it brings the camera back a little bit further. It brings the larger world a little bit more in focus, and thereby allows for more possibilities. Now, the trick of that is, you know, it requires a better game master to handle some of the events that can come up. Whereas any dungeon is very controlled and your players have a limited number of options, in Master Dungeons that's not the case, and the GM needs to be able to step it up and exert his or her control, as it were, over the storyline where it might be called for. There's a lot of opportunities for players to get off the reservation, and for a good GM that's always an opportunity. You know, to tell a little bit more nuanced story. For GMs that may be daunted by the ability to make rules on the fly, that's not always the case. And so, you know, our first Master Dungeons, which is Dragora's Dungeon, it's a much more complex adventure than any of the DCCs that we've issued, and I would never recommend it to a game master on his first time out with a fourth edition adventure. It could be a little challenging, but for game masters with a few games under their belt, they're comfortable with this, with playing some things on the fly. They're looking for a dynamic adventure where the location isn't quite controlled as a normal dungeon crawl. Then it's a really good choice. Part of my role as a line editor is trying to make sure that all the lines stay very focused and they all have their own unique identity. So I get a lot of proposals for Dungeon Crawl Classics, and the proposal might be a fantastic adventure, but if it doesn't fit the line, if it doesn't do what the line says it'll do, if it's not a Dungeon Crawl Classic, it has to be a rejection, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, you know, people come to the DCC line for something very specific, and if you disappoint them in that, then I haven't done my job.
Okay, so the Dungeon Crawl Classic, which is the older of the two lines, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
That one is focused to the point that a DM doesn't have to worry too much about story design.
Because not at all.
There's not a lot of room for the players to get off the reservation, so to speak.
Right. And there's the opportunity for a GM to expand that. And, you know, you can players will take as much rein as you'll permit them. But right out of the box, you can place them at the start of the dungeon. They take their pre-gens, or they take their six or five PCs, and they're good to go. For a master dungeon, you need a little bit more background. The character development will have to be a little bit more involved. It's a slightly more evolved campaign, which doesn't make it a better game necessarily. I mean, some of my most enjoyable games have been, you know, simple dungeon crawls. I remember the very first time I played through Caves of Chaos, and I can guarantee you I didn't have a lot of character background before I died. But for GMs and DMs looking for something a little bit more in their campaign, a little more nuanced campaign with a little bit more background depth, Master Dungeons is the way to go.
Okay. And so since you've sort of expanded and added new lines with new levels of focus to what Goodman Games is doing, does that mean that some of those submissions that you were getting that you had to turn down because they didn't fit Dungeon Crawl Classics, maybe now you can turn them around and say, but it might fit the Master Dungeons line
and
talk to people that way?
Exactly. It makes my job a lot easier now that I have more options, more places that I can plug in somebody's proposal. And if I get a DCC that doesn't quite fit the line, isn't quite as focused as I'd want it, if it looks like it might make a good master dungeon, I can apply it there. The trick is, so many designers right now, myself included, we've been thinking in terms of 3X and 3.5 for how long now? And fourth edition is really a different game. And so I'm not looking for DCCs that are, you know, retooled 3.5 adventures. That misses the point. And so anytime someone is looking to submit a D4 or a DCC or Master Dungeons, they need to know fourth edition, for better or worse.
Okay, and how difficult is it to get submissions from people that really know fourth edition, given that it's only been out for 1.5 years?
Yeah. It's a challenge. It's not necessarily obvious right on the cover letter how much somebody knows their fourth edition game. And sometimes I have to actually take the next step and ask the author, have you played fourth edition yet? Do you know what this adventure is going to look like in terms of game balance? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but certainly the authors that have played 4th edition, you can see it in their proposals. They're distinct in certain ways from the 3.5 rehash adventures.
Is it more like because they're using the right terminology and that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm.
Right terminology, but also encounter design is one of the big switches. Big changes from 3.5. If there's you could design an entire third edition dungeon using nothing but solo monsters, whereas you would never see that under fourth edition. If there aren't minions in there somewhere, if there's not some solo monsters, you'll know when you see it.
Okay, so other than that, what other differences do you see between writing a 4th edition adventure and writing a 3rd edition adventure?
It's been a great relief to me. You know, having played Dungeons & Dragons for so long, and then seeing some of the having a contingent of of the DCC authors, we all went down to the D&D Experience, and we played through some of their dungeon delves. And initially, some of our expeditionary force, they were turned off by the way that fourth edition was presented. It's a great solace to me to discover since then, through the writing, the playtesting, and the designing, that despite how Wizards has presented it, the difference isn't really that great. If you'll think back to some of the last mega modules put out by Wizards under 3.5, I think you have Runes of Undermountain, and it might have also been Runes of Greyhawk, but it was essentially Greyhawk Castle. They were presented in a very similar format to how Wizards is presenting 4th edition. And so the shift that Wizards made in their flavor text, in the layout of their adventures, that was done long before 4th edition ever showed up. And so it's a great solace to me to see these, you know, DCC 53 Sellswords of Punjar, to look at it as how it's laid out, how it plays, and it's actually not that different from a 3.5 adventure in terms of, you know, we're still trying to tell really cool fantasy stories. Sellsword, well, actually the whole Punjar series, they try to evoke some of the, you know, Grey Mouser adventures that you might see in Lankmar. And you can tell those sorts of stories under any edition of Dungeons & Dragons, and you can tell them under a 4th edition. Coming back from the D&D Experience, I might not have been able to tell you that, but now having played with 4th edition a little bit more, I'm really pleased that we're still doing what we did under the last edition. And if and when 5th edition comes out and Goodman Games still has the privilege of publishing adventure modules, you know, we'll still be telling those same stories.
Okay, so in terms of writing stories, things are pretty similar between the two editions.
Yeah, you know, a great dungeon, hopefully, you know, you're offering your players opportunities to play out their player characters with heroism. And that's been true under the last edition, that's true under this edition, and that hasn't changed. The DCC line, even though it's a new edition, it's still doing the same thing that it claims it does on the box.
Okay. So, in general then, if a DM's wanting to create good 4th edition adventures, let's say an adventure that doesn't suck,
yeah.
How can they take... What advice would you give them, I guess, to creating 4th edition adventures that use the rules to sort of make their stories sing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's a fantastic question, Jeff, and I apologize if I have to pause a little bit to think it through. And you'll get a different answer from every author. If you were to interview Chris Doyle or Adrian, who wrote Isle of the Sea Drake, he'd tell you a little bit different. But for myself, I think it's the job of an author not to get trapped into, you know, it's the same thing for third edition. You know, the 10-foot corridor leads to a 20-foot by 20-foot room full of orcs. Well, no, that's what I mean. If ever we sell something like that, we failed in our job as authors. I have no special effects budget there, and there should be no limit to the amount of really cool challenges that PCs get themselves into. And too often we forget that as authors, and we don't. Exciting locations, dynamic places to beat up monsters and take their stuff, that's very cool stuff. There's no excuse to have a boring combat. You know, it should be taking place, you know, in and around pools of lava with dragons erupting from the lava, and lava's getting splattered everywhere, and you know, it's singeing the PC's armor. You know, there's no excuse for boring adventure design. And one of the real strengths of 4th edition is it opens up the window for that a little bit more. Whereas in if I was to write a third edition module, you know, I would need to know my math backwards and forwards before running any sort of encounter like I just described. You know, how much damage does a lava splatter do? Well, and how does that relate to a burning flask of oil? Well, and it better be internally consistent. Now, which isn't to say for fourth edition it doesn't need to be internally consistent, but it has to be consistently balanced. It needs to be, the encounter needs to be appropriate for the character level. And don't get me wrong, I'm a real fan of putting PCs in over their heads and watching them scramble to find a creative way out. If you know, some of the best adventures come when PCs, you know, all right, you know, they're up against a wall, all their traditional options are exhausted. That's when you get memorable games where the players really had to think through this world and this encounter and to come up with a creative solution that was internally logical and consistent with the world. And you know, those are the encounters that the players will remember for a lifetime. I'm sure you have games that you played when you were 12, 13, and 14 where all the dice went wrong and suddenly your group of friends were up against the wall and whoops, now we got to come up with something that to really think this through. And I apologize, Jeff, I forgot what the original question was. I think it had to do with how do you make a fourth edition adventure sing or a fourth edition encounter. And the answer to that is, you know, it needs to be dynamic. It needs to be evocative. It needs to be exciting. It needs to be something where the player characters realize that, whoops, we're in a little bit over our depth. How are we going to find our way out?
Okay. That's interesting in that a lot of what you're describing is very much in the feel of what I've seen for the philosophy of 4th edition in general, is making things very dynamic and evocative and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's not always what comes to mind when I think of classic adventures from, you know, back in the 1st edition and 2nd edition days. So how do those two concepts sort of reconcile into the Dungeon Crawl Classics line?
No, that's totally fair. But at the same time, if you think back to White Plume Mountain, and I know some people hate that adventure, they look at it and they say this thing makes absolutely no sense. So, listeners, if you hate White Plume Mountain, I apologize. But if you look through, there's not a single boring encounter in White Plume Mountain. You're fighting for a whelm, and basically you're in this bubble and it's covered with boiling water and there's a crab there, and if you happen to puncture the bubble, you're going to get sprayed by scalding water. That's a fourth edition encounter. Then there's the other one where they're jumping across, there's the cavern where there's the boiling mud below and there's these swinging metal discs and you have to cross from disc to disc to disc. You know, meanwhile, there's a vampire at the far end of the chamber who's just, you know, waiting for you to get close enough. Again, that's the sort of encounter we're looking for. And I hate to call that a fourth edition encounter, but it's the sort of encounter I'm looking for in a fourth edition adventure. And so White Plume Mountain was the easy one. Keep on the Borderlands, Cave of Chaos. All right, perhaps that's not quite as dynamic as you would hope for. However, there is that one encounter where there's the ogre cave, and right next to him there, I want to say it's a goblin cave. And at some point, if your PCs make it far enough, the goblins knock on the secret door. They toss a bag of treasure through to the ogre, and essentially. And then the ogre comes through. He comes through the secret door and begins to pound the crap out of a bunch of PCs who thought they were just up against the goblins. That is an encounter that is very suitable for fourth edition. I mean, you could translate that as, you know, minions summoning a big solo monster. And whereas, you know, again, I'm not necessarily looking for fourth edition encounters. I'm looking for dynamic encounters. That's what I want to see in a fourth edition adventure.
Okay. So you have three products on the upcoming list from Goodman Games.
Yes, sir.
Cell Swords of Punjar, Forges of the Mountain King, which are from the Dungeon Crawl Classic line, and then mm-hmm. Dragora's Dungeon, which is from the Master Dungeons line.
Yes, sir.
Can you briefly sort of summarize those products, what they're about, what the stories are being told, and then, you know, how are they dynamic? How do they fit into that dynamic?
Yeah, see if I can live up to my spiel.
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with Cell Swords of Punjar. I don't want to say my favorite of the three, but certainly one that I'm very excited to see. Cell Swords of Punjar is set in the, you know, the dingy, nasty slums of a large city. Like all the DCCs, it's intended to be world neutral. So you can pick up Cell Swords of Punjar, you can plunk it into Waterdeep, you can throw it into Greyhawk City, you can place it in Lankmar. And but what it is about is your PCs, and there's a variety of hooks in the beginning of the adventure to justify what your PCs have against the bigger king. But there's the leader of this guild of beggars, who has begun making pacts with forces too wicked to name. and the PCs, for one reason or another, either one of their siblings was kidnapped and hasn't been seen since, or they were hired by the Thieves Guild to take this guy out. But they're at the edge of this slum, and they're there to take down the Beggar King. Now, en route, things become a bit more complicated, as is the want of any good adventure, you know. And but what I really like about Cell Swords, and what made me really happy, is that we designed it with a 3D environment in mind. And so we have these slums, and of course the slums have sewers, and of course the slums have these rotting ruins standing on top of that, and of course these slums have rooftops. And I always wanted to see a good Lankmar adventure, or a good City of Greyhawk adventure, where my PCs were running from rooftop to rooftop and in pursuit of something, or they were, perhaps they began an encounter, you know, down in this dirty alley, but then they climbed onto the roof so that they could surprise, you know, whatever it was that they were luring out of one of the slums. And that's what Cell Swords does really well. Most of my adventures are attempts to capture modules that, when I was 12 years old, I'm sure I was absolutely certain those modules existed out there somewhere. I never found them. And these adventures are attempts to get at that. And so the classic Grey Mouser adventure, where, you know, they're leaping from rooftop to rooftop, and their next scene down, you'll find them trapped underneath down in the sewers, and the next scene after that, they'll be in the throne room of the Wicked Beggar King. That's that tone, that theme, that opportunity for, really, for the PCs to play with every part of their environment. I couldn't tell you if there's ever been an adventure before where legitimately you can climb onto the rooftop, duck into a window in the next building over, and, you know, and make your way through that building, you know, through the back door to the room you're in. I haven't seen that adventure, but that was something we wanted. It makes perfect sense. That's not a fourth edition adventure. You know, that's just a cool adventure in an urban slum that we've all wanted to play, or at least in the mind of Harley Stroh, that he's wanted to play for a long time. That's what Cell Swords of Punjar has going for it. Forges of the Mountain King, that's a follow-up. My very first sale to Goodman Games was Legacy of the Savage Kings, which introduced a Witch Queen. And golly, I don't know, this must have been back in maybe 2004 or something. But she's appeared in three or four adventures since then, and so we have a lot of Goodman Games fans that are they're looking for the follow-up adventures. You know, in Legacy of the Savage Kings, the players, the PCs eventually defeat the Witch Queen, but there's always this reference to a Mountain King somewhere. And so what this adventure does for longtime fans is it answers the question, all right, well, tell us a little bit more about the Mountain King. However, for people that may have never picked up a DCC before in their life, what it offers is really fun trap design, in my mind. You know, we all have that vision of Indiana Jones outrunning the rolling ball, or, you know, in the movie Labyrinth, there was that goblin contraption that chews up the entire hallway as our heroine and her friends are trying to outrun it. In a very similar vein, we are presented here with a dungeon that for untold numbers of years, dwarves have been stocking this thing with very interesting, hopefully fun on the for the part of players, traps. And interspersed in and among that dungeon, there's a legendary forge where the PCs can I don't want to give away too much, but suffice it to say that when designing traps for Forges of the Mountain King, these dwarven traps that were who knows how old, it wasn't enough to simply say, oh, it's a 20-foot pit trap with spikes at the bottom. You missed your reflex save, boom, you hit the bottom of the pit and you take, 1d12 points of damage. That's boring. There's no opportunity in there for PC heroism. So instead, we have traps that, for better or worse, the PCs get to interact with, which, as a part of a game designer, I get to tell myself, all right, if I give players more opportunity to get a way out, well, that means I'm permitted the opportunity to make this even more deadly. So it doesn't come down to just a reflex roll. It's has the player playing his part of his player character. If he can think his way out of this, he gets to live. And if he can't think his way out of it, well, that's unfortunate. He better make a reflex save or the guy's toast. That's what Forges of the Mountain King offer. And then finally, Master Dungeons, Dragora's Dungeons. It was this opportunity to work with Clyde Caldwell and to use this classic piece of art with a classic TSR artist. And for any of us that have been playing for, in the last 15 years, we have Clyde Caldwell, we have Elmore, we have Parkinson, we have Errol Otis, Easley, these brilliant artists. And so the opportunity to use Clyde Caldwell on the cover of Dragora's Dungeon was just it was a dream come true. It's something that you don't think you might otherwise get a chance to do. However, it places the author in this very interesting position where, all right, I have this brilliant piece of cover art. What's the story behind it? And that's where Dragora's Dungeon sprang from. You have this, apparently this scantily clad female warrior with a green dragon behind her. All right, that makes a great piece of artwork. How do we turn this into a good story? And Dragora's Dungeon explains that. And it has probably the most dramatic ending I've written so far. Legacy of the Savage Kings has a pretty dramatic finale. Dragora's Dungeon upset by an order of magnitude for sure.
Great. So you've got a lot coming out. There's a lot going on with Goodman Games that you're involved with at this time. What else do you want to tell people about what's going on? What have I missed? You know more than I do.
I do. What am I allowed to say that won't get me fired?
I won't tell if you won't.
I can start with our August releases. We have the Points of Light. It's the first in a series. It's the fourth edition. Material is very light on anything resembling a campaign setting, and Points of Light is designed to solve that. It's not system specific, and in fact, in some instances, the designer Robert Connolly, he's written excellent mini campaign settings that in some instances are really more AD&D than necessarily in fourth edition, but they all fall under that new. Not new, but the newly defined design consideration of Points of Light. We also have PC Pearls, which is the follow-up to Goodman Games' GM Gems. If you're familiar with GM Gems, it's essentially a toolkit for game masters whenever they get stuck or whenever they're forced to if you're going to pickpocket somebody, well, what's in that? What's in that pocket? And GM Gems solves that question. Well, PC Pearls is it's a collection that allows for character inspiration. So for players that may have a little difficulty imagining a backstory for their PC, or why is your how come that half-orc barbarian that you're playing, how come he only has one eye? Well, PC Pearls serves to solve that question.
And on a side note, PC Pearls and GM Gems are prizes in the contest that we have going on right now.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that. I should have realized that. That's really cool. They're excellent. We asked the folks from the Work Cabbages to write PC Pearls because GM Gems did so well. So I don't think your listeners will be disappointed by receiving either one of those. And then at Gen Con, they're in the pre-release. Well, the announcements haven't been made yet, but we will have at least two additional gaming aids, and I can't say much more than that, other than they're designed for 4th edition, and I hope folks stop by the Goodman Games booth, because in addition to what we've announced so far, we'll have at least those two for publishers that are kind of down to the wire in terms of getting material ready for Gen Con. It was only just this past Monday that we managed to beat all our deadlines and get the things off to the printers, and so And Joseph Goodman, he's one of those excellent businessmen that he doesn't announce anything until it's absolutely certain. So swing by the Goodman Games booth. You'll see all the August releases, but you'll also see two, maybe, depends how well we can do on our deadlines this week, maybe four releases that haven't been announced yet.
Okay, which is interesting because there's a lot of rumor going around about Goodman Games and the 4th edition releases and the timing of some of that. Is it safe to at least say that Goodman Games and Wizards of the Coast are still on good terms?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we...
I know you can't talk much more about that.
I take my cue from the boss in Chicago. Yes, Joseph communicates regularly with Wizards of the Coast. And so beyond that...
we'll have to wait and talk to him.
Sometime. Yeah, you'll have to interview Joseph in August. I do know that I can speak for all of the Goodman Games staff. You know, myself, all of our freelance writers. There's Chris Doyle, Adrian Palmier. We're all very excited for Gen Con this year. Our booth is actually, and maybe this is too much self promotion, but we're right across from Wizards. We're right across the aisle, and. To have that sort of proximity with the excitement about 4th edition is really exciting. At the same time, there's a lot of folks clearly very disappointed about it, so hopefully they'll direct their ire towards the Wizards booth instead of Goodman Games. But I hope folks stop by the booth, because we have a couple surprises that people may have presumed we were unable to do, and I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good. Sounds intriguing. I only wish I knew more.
I'm sure Joseph will be happy to give an interview as we get a little bit closer to Gen Con.
Sure, sure. Well, and some of my partners from other shows are going to be involved in recording some stuff at Gen Con with Goodman Games.
Fantastic.
So
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get to find out some more stuff from them. The Fistful of Comics and Games and the Gamers Haven guys are going to be all over the Goodman Games scene at Gen Con, so...
Excellent. Swing by the booth, and I'm sure the rest of us will be happy to give interviews.
Well, anything else?
Does
that pretty much cover it?
at this date, if you see new things come up on the Goodman Games coming soon page, you're welcome to give us a call. Just that it's, you know, after we had that probably that 6 month lull. In DCC releases, and so it's very exciting to see, you know, folks stopping over in the forums again, asking questions, getting excited about some of the 4th edition releases. Folks that, you know, that will never play 4th edition. You know, we have a bunch of fans that you know, they play C&C, they play 1st edition Dungeons and Dragons. It's exciting to see them making plans to rip off adventures and villains to use in their own home game. So it's good to be public again about all the stuff that we've been working on ever since last Gen Con. And so thank you for this opportunity, and I hope I get to see you in person at Gen Con.
Well, I won't be there, but you'll get to see some people that I work with a lot.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
And there's Harley Stroh of Goodman Games. Now, a promo for The Basics of the Game. Jeremiah McCoy knows a lot about a lot of different games, and he tells you about them on The Basics of the Game in an efficient and concise manner that I really like. Plus, I was in an episode recently talking about 4th edition D&D and more. You should totally be checking that out. And besides that, he's also a player in the game that I run every other Saturday. And a good guy.
Gamma World.
Nobilis.
GURPS.
Rifts.
Hero System.
Savage Worlds.
Dungeons.
Legend of the Five Rings role-playing game.
Shadowrun.
Amber Diceless Roleplay.
Mage The Awakening.
Space.
Battlelords of the 23rd Century.
Talk.
Call
Mutants
of
and Masterminds.
Changeling. The Lost.
It's all about the basics of the game. The Basics of the Game is a role-playing and tabletop gaming-oriented podcast. Reviews, interviews, and intelligent discussions of the hobby. The Basics of the Game, found at thebasicsofthegame.blogspot.com. Experience in gaming.
And that's episode 80. Hey, why don't you email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com? And don't forget to swing by the forums at vorpalnetwork.com so I can feel good about the geek community we're building. Besides, Victor from Fistful of Comics and Games thinks that his listeners are better about participating in the forums, and I want to prove him once and for all that he's a know-nothing delusional braggart. Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. This time around, why don't you tweet about the show on Twitter if you use the service? Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on the show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And once again, you can find all of that at thetomeshow.com. I want to thank everyone who's been using the store so far. I think it's been used enough this summer to actually pay the hosting fees. Although the release of 4th edition has helped a lot with that, I still wanted to give you guys a pat on the back for supporting the show and getting great Amazon prices along the way. It's like supporting the independent little guy and getting the internet discount all in one. And of course, don't forget that the Tome is a founding member of the Vorpal Network. You should be there now, checking out other awesome Vorpal shows at vorpalnetwork.com. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 80, Harley Stroh of Goodman Games of...
The Tome.